Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way.
And Abundantly Well, Seven Medicines, The Wise Woman Way, the newest book in the Wise Woman Herbal series.
So exciting.
In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses.
TheWiseWomanSchool.com. Join us there for colorful, instructive, easy video courses, including Easy Herbal Medicine with Susan Weed, Happy Knees, a cancer diagnosis, adaptogens for long life, and Abundantly Well companion course, wisewomanschool.com.
You can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you, and welcome, Sarah Ellen.
Thank you, Susan. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, splendidly, because I got a wonderful package from you.
Ah, hooray!
Hooray! With some of my favorite things in it. Let's see if I can remember. There was a bottle of motherwort tincture in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who haven't been listening for years, motherwort is our favorite remedy for calming the anxiety of living on a planet with over 8 billion other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's lots of other smaller anxieties, but I think that's the main anxiety that we all deal with on a daily basis and the consequences of having so many people on this planet, from antibiotics in the food and water to the penguin babies dying because there wasn't enough ice. It's stressful. So, hooray, motherwort. Yay, motherwort.
Yeah.
Levers in tallow. Levers is a sticky kind of bed straw that is renowned for helping to relieve lymphedema, edema, swelling. And tallow is such a wonderful base to put it in. When I was unpacking it, one of the students who was here this weekend, I unpacked it in front of everybody so they could see all the beautiful things that you could make. A class on great remedies. And I said, well, I know this is just filled with great remedies. Let's open it.
Oh, and, cool.
Yeah. And so somebody said, what is tallow? And I said, it's animal fat, but it's more specific. Rose was telling me that tallow is rendered fat. Tallow is always rendered, so there's nothing in it but the fat. And it's usually from around the kidney area.
Mm.
And I found that quite fascinating.
That is very fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And catnip. Catnip and tallow.
Mm-hmm.
And I had shown them how I was using catnip to ward off all kinds of unwelcome visitors from the garden, and that I used it both by growing it, or actually letting it grow, because catnip is a weed in my area, and I let it grow, but I don't let it seed very much. I do keep track of and cut it back, because otherwise there would be nothing in the herb bed but catnip. And I said to them, but here it is as an ointment. And so what this is going to do is help your body do what the catnip is doing for my gardens, repel insects.
Yeah, it may work like that too. It certainly works for my wasp sting, and it works for any itchiness of things. I haven't had to try it on poison ivy yet, knock wood, but I'm curious to see even how that goes. It's just very soothing. It does have a scent to it, but yeah, it's very soothing.
Very soothing. Oh, how beautiful. How wonderful. And our favorite of the year, Hypericum.
Yay!
Yay! Hypericum tincture. And somebody asked about Hypericum at the class this weekend. And Justine said, go and get the course. She said it's one of the best online learning deals out there. And I thought, you know, that's so true. I never even thought about that. But it is. It's a huge amount of information for very little money. Looking at, you know, I sign up for a lot of conferences. I don't hardly go to them, but I sign up for them because I want to see what's happening and who's doing what and what they're charging. And they're charging hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars to buy access to the course. They, like us, are also offering it, you know, for a certain amount of time, short amount of time, for free. But then the take-home price, it gets really steep. I'm like, wow, okay. So I'm so glad that we're continuing something that was always important to me as a working mom, as a single mom, was that I didn't have a lot of what they call discretionary income. In other words, money left over after food, shelter, and clothing were taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always made it my goal to be as available as I can to women who find themselves in that same place that I found myself, wanting to learn and not being able to afford very much.
Mm.
Yeah. After all, it's wise women based on sharing.
Yeah.
Mm. Seems like everything is really putting on a last burst of glory.
Yes. Oh, feels like it's blowing in.
Right before he starts to get some cold going. Are your evenings cooling off?
They're definitely cooling off, and mornings too. And yes, it's leaves, like a very thin first layer of leaves are coming onto the ground. We're supposed to get back to the 90s, though, this weekend and most of next week. So it's like spring in reverse.
Right. Don't be getting at your mittens yet.
Right.
Well, we are up to our elbows in peaches. And
yes.
This year I just cooked them all day by day. We harvested as many as we could. And I cooked them with honey and put them in the freezer. And then we threw the pits into a big jar, 3 cups of pits with flesh on them, not just the pits, because these are freestone peaches, so we had to actually cut the flesh off, so it was a fair amount of flesh left on the pits. Not a huge amount, but a fair amount. And a cup and a half of sugar, 4 cups of water, 3 cups of, and the recipe calls for fruit pits and rinds. It's literally something that you make when you're making some kind of fruit thing from the, quote, waste part of the fruit.
Okay.
And it's, I call them fizzes, because, of course, there's natural yeast on the fruit. And so if you add sugar and water and the fruit and lightly cover it, like with a towel, something breathable, a paper towel or a cloth towel, it will start to fizz. And then you drink it. I like to dilute it because it's kind of sweet. And dilute it either with plain water, seltzer water, if you want it like super fizzy. Seltzer water like doubles up on the fizz. But it's already fizzy on its own. And we did elderberry fizz, which was scrumptious. And then peach pit fizz. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to use stuff your own way. You could just put like good fruit like elderberries in it. Ooh, the elderberry fizz, yum. And then peach pit fizz. And that's all fizzed and bottled. And so today I've been cooking down the, I'm going to say peach pits, but I'm actually standing here taking the pits out of it. It's pulp. It's the peach pulp from the pits that we use to make the fizz.
Okay.
Right?
So this is the third preparation.
Cut the flesh off the peaches, cooked that with honey, and froze it. There was still flesh on the pits. We very lightly fermented. It's fermented like kombucha's fermented. It's just fizz, right, rather than a full-out ferment. And now I'm cooking the fleshy pits from the fizz, which is all bottled and refrigerated now, down with ginger and cloves and cinnamon and sugar, brown sugar. It looks like a whiz, bubble cauldron. And it tastes, you taste it and you go, clove, cinnamon, ginger. Oh, ginger!
Oh, I want someone a scoop of vanilla ice cream. It sounds so good.
Did you hear that?
Yes, vanilla ice cream or vanilla yogurt.
That
no, I took one bite. She said, vanilla ice. This needs vanilla ice cream.
Wow.
Wow. And actually, I was thinking today, you know, you've been so into the peaches, you have ignored the hops. So I must move myself into action to go and harvest the hops.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They're right at that point for you up there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's
nice.
Good lot of hops this year.
Oh, wow.
So,
I got
go out
to
there,
those vines.
My arms shreds harvesting hops. Those vines are so, they're not like thorny. They have, and you don't even really notice at first that they have those little, you know, recurved things on them, but they just even lightly touch your skin. It looks like you've been lashed.
Yes. I'll tell
you. Yes, I've learned to wear long sleeves when I go out to do the hops. It's like, otherwise, you look like you've been battling plants.
It can happen. The tomato plants this year can definitely leave me marked up with interesting, just things I can't get off.
So what have you been up to? What's keeping you busy?
The garden is definitely keeping me busy. Lots of greens. I cooked more collards than honestly I've ever cooked in my life at once. Yes. So many collards. I had they were in the pot for an hour before I finished cutting the whole lot that I had. So they what I put in first had already been cooking an hour by the time I put in what I had cut last. So that
was
a lot of collards. Yes.
And doesn't it just feel satisfying when you carry those cooked greens in their whatever you're freezing them in to the freezer and tuck them away?
Yes, I pack them neatly into little, you know, freezer Ziplocs and lay them flat so I can stack lots of them in there. And it does. It feels nice.
Sometimes I just go and open the freezer and look at it and go, I'm so rich. I can choose collards or kale or amaranth or beet greens or lamb's quarter. Rich in greens. This is really greenback.
Yes, gratitude. Much gratitude.
Such gratitude. The real wealth from the earth, the greens.
Yes, and to be a part of watching it start and grow and harvest, and that's been, I just love that. And the soil, that's, someone asked us this weekend, so why do you have goats? Because I didn't, you know, they didn't have kids this year, so I was like, you know, truly it's become as much about the soil as it has the milk. So we are having so much fun experiencing life with the soil.
There's nothing like compost made from goat barn leavings.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, something came up this weekend between my husband and me, and we have decided that next year, you know, we have planted all heirlooms the years we've been here, and it has resulted in some failures, but we've gotten now to the point where most things will grow, although carrots keep getting crowded out. But I think that's really because we are going to let the garden next year be a wild heirloom garden, do nothing to it other than tend it with the soil and see what happens, because so much this year has come up on its own, and it's just been amazing to see what those plants, where they want to be, and how much and how vigorous they are. So we're gonna have an area that is just for the garden to be edible wild, like cultivated wild. How is that even possible? Yeah, heirloom wild. There we go.
I call it wild tended.
I love that. Yes, love that.
I am actually tending it. I'm pulling out grass. I am taking out ragweed. You know, there's certain plants on my hit list.
Oh, me too.
Right?
And it's amazing how good of a like people ask, I can't even tell the difference between I just look there and I see all the same thing. And it's like, well, just if you pick one plant to focus on, I remember when I was at your house, it was the ragweed. And I learned so much by just focusing on the ragweed that I was pulling, because so many people that were attending classes were allergic to it, and there was a lot in a certain area. So I that's an amazing way to learn plants, is to pick one that's not invited to that space and focus only on it, and that you'll notice a lot. So, yeah.
A lot, yes. Good on you. Good on you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, lots to do out there, everybody. We did a lot this weekend. I had my heart broken open. There's a woman who comes to a yoga class that I attend, and she asked me about something that has been distressing her for years. I believe she said all of her life. And that no doctor has actually been able to help her with. And I said, Yellow Dock might help. And the next week she came back shining and saying, yes, yes, Yellow Dock, it did it. It did what nothing else has ever been able to do. Right? And I, of course, said, it's a weed. And now that you know it works, you can go out and you can pick it yourself and you can make your own tincture. And she says, no, I can't. No, no, I'm a recovered alcoholic. I can't get anywhere near the tincture. Leaving out the part where I had to convince her it was okay to take the tincture, which she did finally agree to. But she's like backing off on even considering making it. So just, you know, dropped it. And then this Friday, she was asking me about places to get Yellow Dog tincture. And that said to me that she was running out of what she had bought. And so I told her that we were going to harvest Yellow Dog this weekend and make Yellow Dog tincture, and she should come to class. And she did. And she, with the help of the whole class, dug a yellow dock root, a pretty big Rumex crispus, the curly dock. As a matter of fact, there was enough to make 3 yellow dock tinctures. So she did really, and she washed the root, and she cut it up, and she put it in the jar, and then I put the vodka over it, and she labeled it, and she went home with 4 ounces of her own yellow dock tincture.
Wow. Wow, how magical.
Does it get any better?
Oh, like you said, that is just like the green, the true green is right there.
She has a friend for life, a friend that grows all over the world. We heard from Atalia, the apprentice who just graduated, who's now back home in Germany, and she says, oh, all of my friends are here.
Oh, yes. They were waiting
to come home.
Welcome.
So this evening's guest is someone that I am very eager to hear what she has to say. Her name is Deborah Wayne, and she's the founder of the International Chronic Pain Institute. She's a world-renowned energy healer whose leading-edge non-drug method, known as high-speed healing, has helped tens of thousands of people in over 160 countries to rapidly release chronic pain, depression, anxiety, trauma, and a whole host of other mysterious and chronic conditions. Deborah Wayne will be here to share the high-speed healing that's possible. 9 o'clock, East Coast time. Stick with us or come back then to hear Deborah Wayne. anybody with a question tonight.
Let's see. We have four hands that are raised in the queue, and I'll remind everyone listening, if you have a question and would like to speak live with Susan this evening, please press 1. Then we'll see your hand go up, and when it's your turn, I'll announce your area code, and you will be live on the line with Susan. All right, and it looks like we have 6 hands that are up at this time. We'll go to the first caller dialed in from the 845 area code. From the 845, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Thanks. So I'm sick and tired of my medication, and I have a neighbor who is 8 years older than me, and instead of the medication that she was given by a doctor, she's taking natokinase, and it works to lower blood pressure, and it's an anti-inflammatory. And actually, she got this from a doctor, an allopathic doctor told her not to tell anybody that he said that. And for 5 years, she's fine. She's walking. She's moving around. And I am dizzy, drowsy, and depressed with my metoprolol, and I am angry as hell.
And so tell us again what she's taking.
Natokinase.
N-A-T-T-O.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, it's a soy. Kind of fermented soy.
Yes, fermented soy, yeah.
Uh-huh, and she takes it as a powder.
I think she takes it as a pill, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly right up there with miso and tamari as a really excellent fermented soy food. But we've had an almost impossible time getting Americans, myself included, to eat it or like it because it's like black snot.
I can't just swallow it with water. I have to eat it.
Well, it depends on the individual person. You can certainly go to the health food store and buy it. Mm-hmm. It is definitely an item of commerce, and see if it works for you as a pill. What I'm saying is it's a traditional Japanese food that has not made it on to the American plate because of a textural problem. And that's why it's usually presented as a pill.
I see. I do remember once eating fermented thing, and I kind of liked it. I don't know if I'd like to eat that every day. But the question is, can I stop my medication, which I want very much? I stopped one day, and my blood pressure went from 140 to 158. And I really got scared. So I took only half a pill. I'm supposed to take one pill of 25 milligrams, half and half, morning at night. And I decided that I'll take only half, one half instead of two to begin with. And I don't know if that's a brilliant idea.
Have you been doing that for a while? Or are you just going to start that?
No, I'm just thinking, and I did it for one day. And this morning when I woke up, after a long series of unbelievable nightmares, and I saw 158 without even lifting a finger, I said, oh, my God. So I took my half, but that's what it is, and I don't feel like taking the other half now. So the question
I would say that you'll be able to tell if it's going to work to take half as much, and it would probably work best if the half a pill were itself divided in half and taken morning and night.
Oh, it is. The damn thing is so powerful, and that's why it makes me dizzy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So don't even take a half at a time. Just take a quarter at a time. But take the quarter, a quarter in the morning and a quarter at night. And this then sets you up to reduce it even further if it turns out that the natto is very effective for you.
So you're saying to take both, to take half, a quarter of a pill and the natto?
I'm saying that natto is a food.
Yes.
And as a food, there are basically no contraindications to using it with drugs.
Yeah, but I'm thinking it's a drug.
You can take both at the same time, which is a good way to get your body accustomed to something, right?
Yeah.
So you take what you've been taking that your body knows how to deal with, and you take the new thing, and then you gradually withdraw the thing you don't want to be taking.
Uh-huh. And how much should I take of this natto?
It's kind of like learning to ride a bicycle with training wheels, right?
Yeah, I understand.
How much should you take of the natto? I'm sure whatever you buy will have a dosage recommendation.
Oh, so whatever it's written on the thing, I would take that.
That would be appropriate, yes.
Uh-huh. Well, and meanwhile, I'm still taking the hawthorn, or I can stop?
I take hawthorn every day. I've been taking hawthorn every day for, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 years.
Uh-huh.
I expect to be taking hawthorn every day for the rest of my life. You have something against hawthorn. It's certainly not making you dizzy.
No, it doesn't feel like it makes me anything, but maybe if you remind me, I will pay attention.
Hawthorn for the aging heart. Hawthorn increases the heart's ability to pump well. It moderates blood pressure. So that if someone is taking a drug that is lowering blood pressure too much and making them dizzy, the hawthorn can help bring the blood pressure up. But if the blood pressure is too high, then hawthorn brings it down. So it's a moderator. It's not a drug. It doesn't have a direction of action.
And twice a day again, because at some point you said take more if... Whatever.
We're wanting to take less drug, and one way to do that is to take more hawthorn.
Yeah.
Hawthorn is in the apple family. It's about as dangerous as applesauce.
Applesauce?
In other words, it isn't dangerous at all. So, however much hawthorn you want to take, you can. And I know the cardiologist that my sweetheart sees has shown us pictures of blood vessels, new blood vessels that have grown to Michael's heart as a result of his taking hawthorn.
Wow. Well, I am taking it, but I was thinking maybe I should take more. You said you can increase the dose if it...
You can if you want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, you know...
You know, we buy a pound of dried hawthorn berries, put a quarter of a pound in a quart jar, fill it to the top with 100-proof vodka, and then 3 months later do it again so that over the course of a year we've used the whole pound of hawthorn berries. And I personally like my hawthorn tincture from the dry berries to be at least a year old before I start using it. But you could start using it at the 3 month mark. That would certainly be fine.
I am very happy
by buying a pound at a time and putting up 4 tinctures over a period of a year, then it's easy for me to make more and to have a constant supply. And if I suddenly decide I want to take more, I have it.
I have the Catskills Mountain hawthorn of the berries. And
she does such a beautiful job. I love her work.
I can't go into doing it, but I'm happy with it. I mean, whatever happy means, but if you tell me that it does those things, I'll keep taking it.
Okay, it does.
Thank you. I'll go on that journey now. Thank you very much.
Love you. Green blessings. Good night.
I love you too. Good night.
All right. And looks like our next caller is from the 913 area code. From the 913, you are live with Susan.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
It's good to talk with you.
Hi.
I was calling to ask if you could talk a little bit about, you were talking about your wild-tended greens, and I have a new house with a backyard with lots and lots of lamb's quarters out there, and I've been drying some to use for later. And we went on vacation, and it got super hot, and the batch that I have on my porch is kind of leached out or seems to have less color. And so I was wondering if there's, if you could talk a little bit about the drying process and what to look for, when to pull them and package them. Like in the future, should I have maybe pulled them so they didn't get overdried? Is that a thing? Is that enough information to go on?
It is. It is. Lamb's quarter and amaranth are beads of virtually every farm and every garden worldwide, and they are fairly unique. Both the greens and the seeds of both plants are edible. Both the greens and the seeds of both plants are complete proteins. It's very rare in greens to find a complete protein. So you have to decide what you want from your lamb's quarter plant. Both lamb's quarter and amaranth are annuals. What they want to do is to drop a seed, have the seed sprout. The seed puts down a root, puts up a stalk, it has flowers and seeds, and it dies. Basil's an annual. So to prevent basil from doing this, we keep cutting off the top so that it can't grow up. It has to grow bushy. By doing that kind of top pruning and then doing the ends of the branches pruning on my lamb's quarter, I've had a single lamb's quarter plant produce greens for cooking all summer long. I'm not sure that I have ever dried lamb's quarter greens, nor would I ever think to do it. One of the kind of niggly things about lamb's quarter greens is that generally, although there are a few species that are different, but generally the stalk of the lamb's quarter is too tough. You have to remove the stalk and just cook the leaves. The amaranth stalk is usually edible. It can get woody and too tough to eat, but most of the amaranth stalk is edible. However, the lamb's quarter flowers and seeds are edible green, so if you want cooked greens and it already flowering, it's not a problem. You can just put those in the pan too. But the amaranth, you can't eat the flowers because they're really bristly. And as I said, it's an annual, so that's what it wants to do. So it goes really quickly past the stage where you can get the amaranth greens and into the stage where it's making flowers and seeds. With both plants, both amaranth and lamb's quarters, once they have gotten well into flowering and making seeds, I stop using the greens. At this point, there is usually a dieback of the greens. There will often be insect infestations in the greens because the plant is really not very concerned about its leaves anymore. It's just going for broke to make as many seeds as it can. And so I let it do that, and then I harvest the seeds. lamb's quarter seeds can be harvested by waiting until most of them are mature, cutting the whole plant and hanging it upside down over newspaper or a piece of plastic or something to catch any seeds that fall out. And in those cases, I do have some dried leaves, but I try not to have a lot. Just my preference. But I do use lamb's quarter seed in cooking frequently, and of course, it's Chenopodium album, the wild one that most of us have, and its sister is Chenopodium quinoa, so it's wild quinoa seed.
And that then is so interesting to learn.
Right, and then amaranth seed, of course, is amaranth seed, sold as amaranth seed, and it is best harvested directly from the plant because the plant ripens its seed over a period of weeks. And I just go out with a stainless steel bowl and bend the amaranth seeding head over the bowl and kind of rub it softly with my fingers to encourage the seeds to come out. When the seeds are really ripe, they'll almost fall out. You can even just kind of jiggle the seed head. And it's Amaranthus retroflexus, which means backbending amaranth. And those seed spikes are very, very flexible, so it's not going to hurt it or break it if you bend it over. How's that?
That was great. Great information. Thank you. I kind of forgotten that it says complete protein and that it was like one where when I found it in the backyard here, I was delighted because it's a really great, and it's, I have a forest of it. It's wonderful. So thank you. I'll let the rest of it, I think I'm going to let the rest go to seed and collect the seed and do it that way. And thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Green blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, and our six callers that have pressed one and raised their hand, and we'll look to the next caller in the 908 area code. In the 908, you are live with Susan.
Yes, hi, Susan and Sarah Ellen. It's Carol. Hi.
Hey, Carol.
Hey. That was my question, was about the amaranth. No. The lamb's quarter seeds, I have, you know, with your inspiration, have lamb's quarter on my deck, and it grew about, in its little pot, about 6 feet tall. But the
isn't it wonderful? It's such a weed.
Yes. So it's a, okay, but the brown and mature, they look sort of kind of like off-white, with a gray hint on them. I should go buy them with the steel dishpan.
Right now, most lamb's quarter in our area is flowering.
Oh, flowers. Flowers.
Flowers are tiny. You need a magnifying glass to see them.
Right. Oh, okay.
They're in clusters toward the ends of the branches and the top of the plant.
Yes. Exactly.
Right?
Yes. That's where I
am. And it looks kind of whitish.
Yes, yes.
Those are the flowers.
Okay. And then the seeds come after the flowers?
And then the seeds come after the flowers, right.
Okay. So we're not, I'm not ready yet at all.
Not ready to harvest lamb's quarter seed yet.
Not yet. But the bottom leaves, they, like, it's like you said, the plant is saying, I'm kind of done with this leaf thing, and it's going into the because the leaves on the bottom, I felt like I missed the window with it. Some of them have turned like down, and so I don't have those leaves. So I'm learning about it. I'm getting to know lamb's quarter. So I feel like I've got to harvest most of the leaves sooner.
It's hard to get much leaf if you just let it grow straight up. You need to prune it like you do your basil. Keep cutting the top off so you get maximum leaf production, right? If you just planted a basil seed and left it alone, it would act just like the lamb's quarter, and all you would get would be a few basil leaves and a bunch of basil flowers.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's okay with the lamb's quarter because the seed's edible. So if you haven't pruned your plant, then you can still harvest for seed. But no one would have gotten very much leaf production from a plant that wasn't pruned.
Okay. All right. That's great information. I appreciate that. And
again, just like with your basil, you just go out, you know, and you prune off the top. You cut off the top of the plant, and that forces it to branch out and to get bushier. And then after a while, a couple of weeks or so, you prune off the ends of all the branches that have grown, which forces them to grow more branches. Now it's really bushy, right?
Why, you've got so many, so many greens. I got.
And now you have lots of leaves.
Yes.
And I will tell you truthfully that when I am harvesting lamb's quarter to cook, I am generally harvesting it either from a very well-tended plant where I'm taking whole branches off now. Now I'm pruning whole branches off to take the leaves off and cook. Or I've gone to some place that has just let it grow, but it's not yet past where it is now, which is just flowering. And I just pick hundreds of those plants and strip the leaves off and cook them.
Yeah.
As they're that prolific a weed in some places, right?
Yes.
So it's different if it's just like one in a pot on your patio and you want maximum leaf production, or if there's just a few in your garden, or if you're out someplace on some farm, which I have access to, where there's thousands of lamb's quarter plants.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. How's your life been? What are you doing that's exciting?
I'm going to go on a couple grandma trips coming up.
Yay!
So that'll be exciting. Yahoo! Yeah. And I have one more question about the amaranth seeds. One of the seed companies probably has those because I don't have any amaranth seeds. I want to grow them next year.
Remind me again where you live?
New Jersey.
You have amaranth.
Yeah, I just don't see it. I have to get the seeds from a seed company.
You don't have to get the seeds from a seed company. What I'm saying is that over the next month, you will see amaranth and you will be able to collect amaranth seeds.
Okay.
From the wild. And if you don't need it till next spring anyhow.
Yeah, right.
So give yourself all fall to find some amaranth that you can throw the seeds around.
Okay.
It's a super common weed.
Okay. I've been looking, Susan, very much.
So tell me where you've been looking.
Well, I live in...
It's not a roadside weed. You have to look in cultivated areas.
Yeah, cultivated. Yeah, when I go up
like
to my...
A farm or a garden, someplace like that that's actually cultivated.
Yeah.
Right? Amaranth's not going to grow out there on the roadside with chicory. It's not going to grow on the lawn with dandelion. Right?
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah.
So be sure you're looking in those places. You're not just going to see it driving down the road. But it loves to grow in potted plants. Of course, I have it all over the place because I have cool compost so I don't kill my weed seeds. And I pot up my plants with compost. And then I get to choose which pots I want to have amaranth in, which amaranth I want to harvest for greens. Right? So I get a lot of young amaranth in almost all of my planters. And I pick it when it's about 8 inches high.
Oh, wow.
And then I stalk in the leaves, right? And again, I'm harvesting like several hundred plants because it's a very prolific grower. And now my other plants in those potters have room, but they've been protected, right, and nursemated by the amaranth when they were really young. And then in a couple of pots, I'll let a grandmother amaranth grow to get big and tall and have seeds so that I could show people about the seeds in the autumn.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah,
oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Here's to
thank
you finding you. Amaranth. I know you will.
Okay. Thank you,
dream
Susan.
Blessings. Love you. Bye.
All right, and we've got five callers that have pressed 1 to raise their hands, and the next caller has dialed in from the 212 area code. From the 212, you are live with Susan.
Susan?
Hello.
Hello, it's Lauren. Hi.
Hi, Lauren. How are you tonight?
I'm unaccountably nervous and worried about calling and asking you for anything. I'm having an attack of... I shouldn't.
I'm so glad you called.
That's good to hear your voice. Last couple of times I called, I had this awful cold. And you recommended L-Campaign, and it was wonderful. And it seemed to be going away. And I was pretty cold, symptom-free for about a week, and then all of a sudden... Big. And I thought it was the cold, but it seems to be more like allergy mucusy, where I feel like my throat is closing up and I can't breathe, which is not a fun symptom. And it scares me. And someone reminded me that I went through this last year. And I remember calling you about it last year. And since I'm no longer living in the apartment where it rains inside and the things that got wet are no longer in my possession, it's probably not the mold we thought it might have been. But it's like the second
year. And last year I probably recommended OSHA.
OSHA, yes. Well, I've been using OSHA and L-Campaign. I've continued to with mullein and some ginkgo and stuff like that. And I was also...
I don't think of OSHA as something to just use. I think of it as something that I keep, like, when you're having that sensation of your throat closing, that's when to use the OSHA. In fact, I find that if OSHA is used daily or repeatedly, it has little effect.
So I should just smack down when I'm having the... bedtime or afternoon, I can't breathe feeling.
Yes.
Like a shot glass.
Just right at that time, 4 to 6 drops.
4 to 6 drops right then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I have been using it kind of regularly because this has been keeping so long a part of my repertoire, the cold.
I just started listening to a book called... If There Were No Cats in the World.
Huh?
It's a book by a Japanese author,
uh-huh,
whose name I don't remember right now. I just started listening to it.
They're pretty fond of cats there, aren't they?
And the reason I'm bringing it up is that the book starts by his talking about a cold that he had.
Huh.
And he just couldn't seem to quite totally shake it. This work or that would work for a little while, and then it would come back, but it would be different. And finally, after some time with this, he went to the doctor. Now, this is a novel, so it might not be true. I'm not saying this is actually true. It's in the novel. But he went to the doctor, and it turned out that he didn't have a cold, but he had a brain tumor.
Oh, great. That's something I can worry about now, too.
Right. Now you can be worried about it, but not be worried, right? Because worry is not really productive. What you can do is you can say to your body, hello, is this a cold or is it a tumor? You know, let me know. And I find that most bodies that ask outright will let you know. It's not like it's your body's advantage to hide the truth from you.
No, but fear will speak up, and you might not hear the right thing.
You know, I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think most of us know what the voice of fear sounds like. And that, that there's a difference between saying, oh, my gosh, I'm so worried. What if it's this? What if it's this?
Yeah.
And actually saying to your body, is this a tumor? Is this something I need to go further with?
Mm.
Not just anxiety, but a specific request.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, hey, anybody can be anxious. That's not what we want. So I don't know, but I do trust that the universe led me to start listening to this. And here you are calling in to say, gee, I thought I had gotten rid of it. We thought it might have been mold. And yet here it is still going on. Mm-hmm. What could be happening? Well,
and that's still going on.
Novel. I don't even know if it's really possible.
It's going on again. It's going on.
Yeah.
It went on last year this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also pointed out to me, because I didn't remember it was exactly this time. I remember I had had the symptom, and it had stressed me out. But and it was Anna Klemp who said, you know, you were getting ready to start some big things just before you had this. And you're doing it again right now. And it just
wow.
kind of rocked me. Yeah, I know. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Good observation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what to make of it and how to help myself with it.
Well, do you think that there is an energy that is available to you but is stuck in your throat?
100,000%. In fact, I've been working on that, like with the chakra stuff and the looking at where I've been, what I've had that's fueled me and why certain aspects have been shaky and how it's sort of come out in result of my having, of holding back with some transitions, of taking more time. And instead of lacerating myself for them, which I have in the past, I'm thinking, well, maybe it just was that I needed something, some time to shift. Maybe
yes.
It's not because I have to be so, you know, it's like we used to think of symptoms as bad things to eradicate instead of, oh, this is happening, okay.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
Hello.
What's up? What's it telling me?
Yeah, but partly because I really want to counter people's belief that they're in school.
Yeah.
We're not in school. There are no lessons to be learned. You're not going to graduate or fail. You're here for experiences, good, bad. The only thing I would say is avoid indifference.
Yeah, or avoid being not walking into them.
Yeah. So, you know, it doesn't have to be a good experience or a bad experience or, we're here to experience. And how amazing is that? So it's, to me, it's like a portal of power, a portal of energy. a opening that, as you say, I can treat as a symptom and close down, or I can treat as an ally and do my best to have the courage to go through the opening, as you just said.
Yeah.
And you know I'm a great believer in always, you know, ruling out the worst. So if you get some intimation that it might be something scary or bad, go and have that checked out. Rule it out.
Where would I rule that out?
Where would you, if you really get like a something from yourself that's like, yeah, you know, this really could be a tumor, then you get yourself into the system and you get an MRI. And you rule it out. It's okay to rule something out so long as you're clear with the people that you're working with from the jump, that's your intention. Your intention is to rule something out.
Yeah.
And should they find something, they need to understand from the jump that you're not necessarily agreeing to their protocol.
Right.
That you're there for diagnostics.
I had read something about the whole mucus thing and somebody thinking it was lung related, and it turned out to be brain related.
It turned out to be what related?
Brain related.
Brain related.
Yeah. And I don't have any more information about that at all.
It's a scary thing to contemplate.
Yeah. I actually, oh God, you know, I don't even want to say this. Yeah, I recently had a talk with my cousin's husband. I had no idea that he had been going through tumors that have had to be reduced because they're benign, but they might affect his optic nerve. And for years, and he's fighting the insurance company to get the right treatment. Yeah, really, absolutely disgusting. There's one place in Harlem that does this fabulous work, and that's what he needs. And it was actually 9/11 exposure, possibly. He didn't think about that, but he was... I don't know. I just heard this story a few weeks ago at a family thing, and I had no idea that he had been going through that or that he had been so exposed continually at his workplace after the buildings went down. Not my story, but 3 brain tumor stories recently.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will also ask the grandmothers to, clue me in if there's anything further that I need to share with you.
Really, would you?
I will.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Susan. I should go away now, right?
You're right.
That's this whole thing. Are you allowed to ask? Are you allowed to receive?
Right. So true.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for being here.
You are welcome. I love you lots.
I love you lots.
Green blessings.
Green blessings. Thank you, Susan.
Lauren the Greater. Yes.
I'll work on it.
Okay,
thank you.
Yes.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, and there are six hands raised that have pressed one, and we will go to the next that's dialed in from the 707 area code. From the 707, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. It's Marion. Thank you.
Hi, Marion. What's up tonight?
Well, I'm doing some wound care for a dog, and I wanted to know if you think I'm doing okay. He's a French dog. He's a 10-year-old yellow lab. He had surgery on his flank, you know, his upper thigh, to have a tumor removed. So it was a pretty good incision, like 4 inches. The last bit, the last round part in the middle, is not healing well. So I volunteered to bring him home, and I packed it the last couple of days with comfrey powder and yarrow powder, mixed it with some, I tried olive oil, but he licked that, so aloe, and I just pack it in there and cover it up. Does that sound good?
I'm remembering back to what Barbara did at the Comfrey Conference. And she told us that it was important to use yarrow tincture in the wound.
Mm-hmm.
And that she first thoroughly drenched the wound in yarrow tincture before putting comfrey on it.
Okay. All right. I don't have that on hand, but I can get some.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And aromatic things like yarrow when powdered lose their effectiveness pretty quickly.
Okay.
If you buy it as a powder.
Well, I bought from the garden, so I dried the flowers.
From your garden that you dried and powdered?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So you could at some point in the future make a tincture.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say that about 80% of the yarrow that I encounter, I tincture. About 18% I put in oil, and the remaining 2% I might dry. I hardly ever use yarrow dried.
Okay. Well, that's what I had, so I did that. I also have
But you could also do that up as a wash.
Okay. Yeah, I made a tea, too, out of the yarrow and the comfrey.
Yes.
So I can dab the wound with that.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
And I have calendula flowers.
Is it responding to this?
Well, it's only been about a day and a half. So I'll know, hopefully, in a couple of days.
Yeah. I have little to no experience using powdered herbs.
Okay. All right. Well, that's what I had.
So I don't know, you know, if it's going to impact the healing of the wound, like if it's mechanically going to hold it open.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to use poultices and soaps and compresses on wounds.
Well, I have a tea ready, so we'll do a compress tonight.
See if that works well, too. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't do it wrong.
Right.
And, you know, if the dog has a scar, it's not the end of the world.
Oh, no, we don't care about the scar. We just want it to heal.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right. In a person, yeah. I'd say, oh, well, you can't do that because it might make a scar, but on a dog, we're not so concerned.
No, we just want him to get well. Okay.
So the most important thing is what you're doing is all good. It's all totally good.
Okay.
And keep on doing it, and you can't do it wrong, and I'm sure this dog is going to get lots better.
Maybe I'll call you next week. Thank you.
That'd be great. Do it. Mm. Thank you. Great blessing.
Thank you. Love you. Bye.
All right. The next caller is dialed in from the 412 area code. From the 412, you are live with Susan.
Hi, Susan. It's Margaret. And
hey,
I would appreciate your opinion and your advice. I had breast cancer 27 years ago, and I have been fine basically since. But a year ago, I had a worry about ovarian cancer, and so they gave me a hysterectomy, and I did not have it. But since
gnashing of teeth, screaming. I wish you'd called me that. I really wish you'd called me that before you left and castrate you.
Well, I'm 79, so it's really an issue at this point.
It is an issue. You're now at 10 times greater risk of a heart attack.
Well, I'll
You're now at 5 times greater risk of a broken hip. It is an issue what they did to you, Margaret.
Okay.
It's an attack on your womanhood. And that there was no reason for it really makes me scream.
They
took, and you know what? Ovarian cancer doesn't start in the ovaries. If we're worried about ovarian cancer, we take the fallopian tubes and we leave the ovaries. I don't care how old the woman is. The ovaries are still producing 29 kinds of estrogen.
Well, because
do you now take hormone pills?
No, I don't.
Okay.
All right.
At least not that. But ovaries are absolutely critical for a woman's longevity and health. And there's no reason, unless cancer has been actually diagnosed in the ovary, to ever remove a woman's ovaries.
Well, it's interesting because they can't
I
come
hope
until they
you become
removed.
A loud voice telling other women not to have their ovaries removed.
Yeah, I probably will do that.
Thank you,
Mark. Anyway, since then, the problem that I have experienced is that the left breast where I had the original cancer has shrunk half its size. And I am flat-chested anyway, but this is down to
just saying to
nothing.
You that the ovaries continue to produce 29 kinds of estrogen your entire life.
Yeah.
You don't have your ovaries, they're not producing that, and you're not taking it. What's going to happen is you will wind up without any breasts pretty much at all.
Well, I don't care about that, but I wondered about the difference between the two. Why is it depleting in the one breast where my previous cancer was, the breast cancer 27 years ago, as opposed to the
and
other.
And how is that breast cancer treated?
With chemotherapy, consider it was 27 years ago, so with chemotherapy and radiation.
The effects of which are lifelong. Doesn't matter if it was 27 years ago or 107 years ago.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'm doing fine.
Yeah, absolutely. But you're asking why that breast would react so much, and that's why, because that breast is still dealing with the after effects of the chemo and the radiation. Your whole body is still dealing with the after effects of the chemo, and the area that was irradiated is the part that has to deal most strongly. And as in any radiation incident, the effects get less and less and less, but they're still always there.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked at the amount of damage that radiation did, even with all of the protections that I had against it, and how little the medical profession does to warn people about it.
Well, my radiation was the new kind of radiation. Even 27 years ago, it was at the University of Pittsburgh, and it was directed, you know, they put around it so that it just was at the point of where the cancer was.
So was mine.
Oh, okay.
And it was only a few years ago, and even better state of the art. And believe me, fucked my body over big time.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I just wondered if you had any advice or suggestions for me, but you kind of have answered my question.
Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions right now?
Am I doing what?
Drinking.
I couldn't hear.
Are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions? Nourishing herbal infusions are made each evening at your home by boiling water, weighing out 1 ounce of one of five herbs, I'll tell you what they are, not all together, but just one of them at a time, into a quart jar, and then pouring the boiling water into the jar, lidding it and letting it steep overnight, straining it the next day, refrigerating the liquid, and drinking that nourishing herbal infusion. So one of the herbs might be nettle.
Okay.
One of the herbs is red clover.
Okay.
A great ally to women and to breasts. One of the herbs is oat straw, a great ally to hormonal health in the body. One of the herbs is comfrey, a good ally to flexibility. And one of the herbs is linden. Many people have heard of turmeric and heard that it's an anti-inflammatory. And linden is, maybe 100 times more powerful than turmeric.
Okay.
So it's really fabulous anti-inflammatory. So each evening I make 1 quart of one of those herbs. So last night I made oat straw, and that's what I'm drinking today. And then tonight I might make comfrey, and I'll drink that tomorrow, and so on. And my goal is to drink a quart of infusion a day.
Okay.
But not to drink any water of any kind ever.
Really?
Really.
Wow. What will the water do to me?
Well, there are no medical studies showing that you need to drink water. The whole idea that you need to drink 2 quarts of water a day was made up by an advertising executive to sell bottled water.
Oh, sure.
And I'm suggesting that you drink a quart of infusion. So that's a quart of liquid right there.
Sure.
And that you eat a good diet from which you will get another quart of fluid. So you'll wind up getting 2 quarts of fluid. But if you, in addition to that, drink 2 quarts of water, you're now really messing up your electrolyte balance.
I see.
Did you read the story about the woman who killed herself by drinking water the other day?
No.
She was very thirsty. She drank 3 bottles of water, one after the other, and died.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Do you think any tests?
But most people do that. Most people do that just over a period of years by over-consuming water. So along with drinking your nourishing herbal infusion, which is going to provide your body with a plentitude of proteins, vitamins, minerals, polyphenols, anti-inflammatories, right? And they're foods. They're nourishing. They're not drugs in any way at all. So they're totally safe for anybody of any age, and you can interface them with any kind of other things that you're taking or doing. That's not a problem at all. And most people find that once they start backing off on the water, drinking nourishing herbal infusion instead of water, that a lot of their acute and chronic health issues really turn around.
Interesting. So do you think that I should have any tests or does anything seem relevant to do at this point?
I'm not sure what a test would show us.
Okay.
Do you think there's a difference in the size of your breasts because the breast that's smaller is undergoing some problems?
Well, that, I mean, when I look at it, I just think, oh, my heavens, you know, what has happened here? I mean, is there a possibility of another tumor that's just widespread?
The tumor would make, tumor would make it bigger.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Okay.
Smaller.
I hadn't thought of that. But what about this widespread bad stuff all over the breast or something like that? Or, I mean, should I...
There is a kind of cancer that is kind of general all over the breast, and it makes the whole breast look like an orange peel.
Oh, no, I don't look like that.
I saw my mother, and my mother pointed it out to me. She pointed out her breast to me when she was undergoing chemotherapy, and she said, look at what this is doing. They're going gone.
Hmm.
So I have seen this in other women, especially after the removal of the ovaries, if the women aren't taking hormones, that that's one thing, one of the disruptions that happens when your ovaries are stolen.
I see. Yeah, you're right. I should have called you before I had the operation.
Wish you had. I didn't say you should, but I said I wish. No shoulds. You did what you did at the time, but I wish that you had, because I like women to keep their ovaries. It's healthy for women to keep their ovaries. It doesn't have anything to do with having children.
Oh, right.
And you're a sturdy, strong woman, and things are going to work out just great with you, and I'm glad that it's not a cosmetic issue.
Oh, yeah. No, I could care less.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. I appreciate
it. Thank you. You take care, Margaret.
Bye.
Good night.
All right. And there are four callers that have their hand raised at this time. And the next caller has dialed in from the 401 area code. From the 401, you are live with me.
Hi, Susan. Green blessings.
Hey, green blessings.
I'm going to cut to the chase and make it as quick as I can. I have two questions. One is a probably short answer, and the other may be more complicated. I attempted the peach fizz with my peach peels.
And?
Gone for a couple. I got a layer of mold on top. Can I carefully scoop that off and try it?
What color is the mold?
White.
Yes, it's fine.
Okay, so if I just get it out without leaving any in, I should be okay.
So there's no fizz. Wait, there's no fizz going on.
Well, there is fizz because you can see it bubbling under the mold.
Oh, good. Okay, so yeah, just get the mold off. And my guess is that the container wasn't full.
Yes, and it wasn't pushed down, and I wasn't here to stir or anything either. Do you normally stir?
Yeah, all of those things,
Okay.
Just off the
learning
mold.
Curve.
And I just bottled it up in kombucha bottles, which can withstand the pressure, and refrigerate it when it gets to the point that I want, because it'll keep on going. Remember, it's a recipe for vinegar.
Right, yeah, that's what I remember you saying the other day, is you got to drink it before it's vinegar.
So you get, you know, like with kombucha, you got to like, boop, get it right at that fizz stage if that's what you want. And if not, like the kombucha, it'll become vinegar, and it's tasty that way too. I just used some peach vinegar that I had from the last time I made peach fizz, and I just let some go to vinegar just to see what it was like.
Peach vinaigrette. Sounds delicious.
Exactly. Okay, and the harder question.
The harder question is, I have three weathers that are about 12 months old. When I got them, they were banded. And my most friendly, loving, I call him my goat dog because he just comes up like a dog or a cat that climbs in your lap. He lost his testicles today, and he's bleeding, and I have a great vet. I'm all new at all of this. So she told me, I mean, I found this out probably 5 o'clock tonight.
I'm not sure what you mean he lost his testicles.
So
is not supposed to make the scrotum fall off.
Oh. I was told by the farmer I got them from that that's what would happen. They would just kind of dry up and fall off, and one day they're just not there. But he's quite...
The testicles dry up.
Okay. And then
within the scrotum, which never gets bigger.
Right. Okay.
But there should not be necrotic tissue, and this is why many people don't band.
Okay.
Because it can destroy tissue, and it sounds as though that's what's happened here. So you need some anti-infectives. Yarrow is a good agent as an anti-infective and to stop bleeding and to speed healing.
So I didn't. So I have Juliet's books, and I. He also lost his skir a couple weeks ago, so I had a bloodbath that day too. And I couldn't find any yarrow preparations in the book, so I ended up doing rosemary for antiseptic properties and then some comfrey, and I made just a tea and made it into a spray, which seemed to help the skir thing within a day.
Same. Can't do it wrong.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. I don't know if, I saw rosemary in other preparations, so I wasn't sure.
Juliet loved rosemary, but of course she lived in areas where rosemary grew.
Yes, she did. the vet said he tore it, like, on something. So I just wanted to, she's not an herbalist, so I wanted to run it by you and see if that is... if I did the right thing or if I should do something different.
Absolutely. No, I think you're doing great.
Okay. All right. Well, that...
And if you have Yarrow, you now have permission to use it. You don't need Juliet's say so.
Right. Okay. Perfect.
Okay.
Perfect. Good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Green blessing.
Good night.
All right.
Okay.
And there are three calls.
Let's get one more in here.
All right, 917, you are next from the 917. You are live.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. This is Nagin from Brooklyn. I'm so happy that I was able to speak to you. So I have been experiencing a lot of bloatedness, and I started complaining about it in March, and I went to see my doctor. And I also had asked for a stool test. I asked for everything, and my doctor is really great. She kind of, works with my holistic sense. Fast forward to a month ago, I finally gave the stool test after I got back from my vacation.
You say the stool test. The most frequent stool test is a stool test for occult blood to look for possible cancer. Is that what you're talking about?
I thought maybe like I have parasites. I just didn't really know. And I know like doing a stool test really tells you a lot, right?
So what? No.
Okay.
No. There is no general stool test.
Okay,
if you think you have parasites, you have to do a parasite screen. You have to specifically look for them.
Right.
Do a stool test and look for everything, unless you're going to somebody who's a little, I'm going to be polite and say, fringy.
No. So the stool test, I remember I had to take six different samples and six different bottles. We did a bunch of,
and so that was a screen for specific organisms. That's what I'm saying. There isn't any general test.
Well, I know there was one for parasites as well. And the one that came up...
What were the other ones for?
I cannot recall, but one of them, which was called right stain, and that one came back with white blood cells. And so she was like, there might be some kind of an infection. And by the time I got that result and like days later, because I made an appointment for a gastro doctor. And in those, like in that small window, my stomach was so huge and I was in so much pain
My stomach, I think you mean intestines?
I'm sorry?
By stomach, I believe you mean intestines.
Just like, Susan, my whole abdomen.
Your abdomen is your intestines. If you put your hand between your breasts, that's where your stomach is.
Okay, so this was like right under, this is like what's happening is under my left rib cage.
Under the left rib cage. So that's your intestines, not your stomach.
Yeah, it's the wall. Anyway, after seeing the gastro, which he was not a good fit at all, I just had a new one yesterday, and she's amazing. But he tested me for H. pylori, and so I tested positive for that. And so
Every human being has H. pylori. Hello.
Right, which I know I learned so much about H. pylori through my friends, through my two girlfriends that had it, through a functional medicine doctor.
Everyone has it. The only people who are injured by it are people who take antibiotics to get rid of it.
Right. So I refused the antibiotics.
Thank you.
And I put myself, yes, I put myself on a regimen. This is now, I started, this Friday will be 2 weeks. And the new gastro doctor that I went to, she was really open. She was like, well, I trust that this, you know, this protocol that you're on.
I'm so interested in this that I hope you can call back next week so that I can hear all of it because, whoa, our time is up. I'm so sorry. Really want to hear it, but just can't do it right now. I need to introduce Deborah Wayne, the founder of the International Chronic Pain Institute and a world-renowned energy healer. Her leading-edge non-drug method, known as high-speed healing, has helped tens of thousands in over 160 countries to rapidly release chronic pain, depression, anxiety, trauma, and binge eating. And these are all capitalized, so we know that they're like really serious, not just regular stuff. Chronic fatigue, insomnia, and many other mysterious and chronic conditions. She is a highly sought-after speaker and a number one best-selling author of Why Do I Still Hurt? Deborah Wayne has earned degrees and certifications in psychology, hypnotherapy, chemical dependency counseling, and has 35-plus years of practicing and teaching meditation. She's also a nationally recognized glass artist, a former professional modern dancer, a certified yoga instructor, and leads the only practitioner training worldwide in her proprietary method of high-speed healing. I'm so excited to have you here tonight, Deborah. Thank you for being with us.
All right, and this is Sarah Ellen. Deborah is with us. I just am not seeing her number. We're communicating through back channel. So, Deborah, if you could just please press 1, and that way hopefully I'll see your hand go up. Ah, there we go. All right, she's coming in from a 111111111 number, and this should be you, Deborah. Welcome.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here tonight. It's a lively call, I can tell.
It is indeed. Tell us a little about high-speed energy healing.
I'd be happy to. So the fastest, safest, easiest way to find the root cause of any symptom or condition is to first look in the energy field. This is a field of information, not the way we normally think of information, but it's vibrational information. And it surrounds the body. It's actually an extension of the body. And when you look in the field, everything is recorded there. Everything that's ever happened to us gets imprinted and recorded in this energy field. And so things that haven't even shown up yet in the body can be detected. So I heard people tonight on your call talking about breast cancer and, you know, H. pylori and all these other issues. You can find these disturbances in the energy field and oftentimes prevent even before it shows up physically. And then if it's already manifested physically, we can...
I just need to stop you for a minute. H. pylori is not a disturbance. Healthy human beings have H. pylori.
Yes. I hear you. I do. But when there's an imbalance, is what I'm saying, and it's causing symptoms that are problematic for people, these are imbalances or disturbances that are...
It's a faux diagnosis. The only people for whom it causes problems are people who take antibiotics to try to get rid of it.
Okay, well, that...
You're right that there can be too much of it, but it's getting rid of it doesn't work to treat it as a disease or a problem. It's better to treat it as something that's supposed to be there and to build up the other things by eating better quality food, and then you're going to get definitely a better energy field, eh?
Well, I appreciate your perspective tremendously. Yes, I hear what you're saying loud and clear. My only point here is that if you look at the subtle level of energy before you even look at the physical body, we could nip a lot of things quicker, and it would be easier for people who are suffering and go down that long rabbit hole where they go symptom after symptom to try to cut it out or drug it out, and then, you know, decades later, after they're exhausted, both financially and emotionally and mentally and physically, and nothing has worked. If we had looked first at the energetics of it, this is the quickest way to delete or bring back into harmony, because it's like our body's like a guitar that can get out of tune. And like you said, it doesn't mean necessarily that there's something wrong, but there's something that's causing a symptom, and most people get very fixated on the physical symptoms, and the entire medical profession looks at the physical. I'm suggesting the first stop should be looking at the energy field, and that's the quickest way to alleviate and bring harmony back. It's like tuning up the strings. You don't need to take off all the strings, throw them out. You need to tune them up.
And so you have ways to help people tune them up?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, tell us more.
So I've been able to develop over many years a high sensitivity, partly due to my background in the arts and for many, many years of meditation. The hands, which are very large energy centers, mine became super sensitive, and I'm able to scan the energy field just like an MRI machine scans the body. And I'm able to actually feel where there are disturbances, and I can bring in healing frequencies. And these absolutely harmonize, and it communicates via the field. So let me back up a second. We all live in a field of information, and this is something discovered by physics. It's not something I made up. There's in the 1980s, a new field was classified in physics, and they called it a torsion field, a spin field, an information field, because they discovered that the field was informing the body. Now, we live literally in an ocean of information that most people aren't paying any attention to, but it's affecting us. And then we have our own energy field that surrounds our own body. So I'm able to scan a field both individually and for a group and bring in harmonious, coherent vibrations, which brings the guitar back in tune. And this can happen very rapidly for many, many people, and even some people who are highly analytical or maybe, you know, very skeptical about something like this. It can take maybe a few more sessions. But
I was
general,
just going to ask you about the people who are skeptical.
Well, it's true. There, you know, and I understand it. This can all sound like, what the hell is she talking about? This is so, you know, out there. But it's really not out there. It's based on principles from physics. And, in fact, it was the National Institute of Health that first studied and gave the name of the biofield to this whole information field. They did a study, and they said, yes, it's real. We don't really understand all of it yet, but they gave it the term biofield. And so there's a lot of research and based on science out there. For those of you skeptics, and believe me, I'm a big skeptic of so many things, so I get it. But the field is a real measurable thing. There are devices that do measure the energy field. Unfortunately, you don't find it anywhere at a doctor's office. They're in subtle energy research labs, and nobody goes there when something hurts. So this is the irony of all of it. But I've developed the ability to scan the field, feel where I need to work, and then bring in these harmonious vibrations, which then the field informs the body. And you have to remember, the body is actually a body-mind-emotion-energy complex. It's not just a body. It's a mind-energy-emotion complex, and it works together as a unified whole. So when I'm able to work with people in my method, it's working on all these levels at the same time, which can have a very profound effect.
Yes.
I'm sure you recognize, even you're talking
about holistic body, mind, spirit, which, as I often say, as soon as you say body, mind, spirit, you've already divided the person.
Exactly. It's so true, right? And we're always labeling, which causes all the
problems.
Right.
And so what you're doing is not giving it those labels and returning it to its inherent wholeness.
Innate wholeness. Yes, exactly. Thank you. We've just gotten, the whole medical field is so... I'm making this word up. It's minutiaized. It's focused on the minutia and all the labels and the separation, which complicates and actually moves you further away from wholeness. And so this brings you back into the innate state, which we all have. Our natural state is wholeness. And every one of us has this ability to go back into that state. I don't care how long you've been sick or had symptoms or pain. I don't care what stage they tell you you're at. We have an innate ability to go back into that whole state, that balanced state, if we're in a safe place with the right support, the right tools, and given the right guidance. And your answers are inside of you. If you were to really be able to listen to it, and the one thing to separate from is the fear. And when you can separate from fear, you can hear the truth of what you really need.
And that is the thing that people always bring up. I'm sure you've heard it as frequently as I have when I say to people, your body knows, ask your body, it will tell you. And nine times out of ten, the answer is, no, I can't trust my body because there's too much fear.
Exactly. That's right. And that comes from our programming, our conditioning from childhood, from education and religions and the world and the news and all of these things that literally are fear-mongering machines. Your natural state is not a state of fear. And in fact, there's only two fears that we're born with, as I understand it. One is loud noises, like explosions, and the other is falling from heights. And think about that. That means every other fear is learned. Every other fear. And most people are walking around consumed with fear and fear-based thoughts and the emotions that come as the result. And this, my friend, is the root of disease. Dis-ease. It comes from fear.
Yes, but not even real fear, because real fear usually causes action. But from anxiety, which is like fear's little sister and immobilizes you.
Yes, and anxiety really, if you take a look at your thoughts whenever you quote-unquote feel anxious, you are thinking in the future about something that hasn't happened yet, and you're telling yourself a scary story. And this is why you hear so many of these ancient and new practices asking people to learn to become present in the present moment. Why? Because in the present moment, that's the only thing you really know 100% is true. The rest of this futurizing is make-believe, and you can scare yourself sick in a heartbeat, in a moment. And if you're looking at the past, it's already done. So in the present moment, when you learn to be very, very present, not only will you lose the fear, you'll hear your answers, and you'll know what to do. And this can take, a little bit of practice, and it's helpful to have a guide until you can do it on your own. But this is something we all can learn to practice, and we should be learning this from the time, you know, we're 2 years old.
I totally agree. It is the real missing element in our education of children.
Isn't it? And their children, the little children, teach us
anything about how to emotionally regulate themselves.
Exactly, exactly. And these emotions.
Often by saying, hello, you need to paint a line down the road and put up some stop signs.
I love that. That's what I tell people, to literally stand up, put your hand out, and say, stop. I will not entertain you one more moment. We have to learn to take charge of these emotional states.
Why are you letting this run your life? Don't.
Exactly. Exactly. Just stop it. Well, you know,
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross often literally said that to us. She'd just look at us and just say, stop it.
Exactly. I do the same. Because, you know, most people, they don't really do it on purpose. They've been trained since a youngster to listen to those external authorities. And they've been told, stop, don't do this, do that, sit still, you know, for so long. And, no, you shouldn't feel that way, and you can't do that. And so they've learned to disassociate from the truth of what would really help them. And they don't know which voice to listen to anymore. So that's where people get confused. And this is why disease takes over, because we're not clear about the inner guidance. There's too many other voices going on in that committee in the head, and we need to do the work to quiet that down.
You're offering two things. First of all, you're offering to the person, if they're in a state where they can't actually get this information themselves, but you're also offering them how to do it.
Well, I offer a multifaceted approach, because if I just do the energy healing for them, that just creates a dependency. That's not my goal. What I do is I give people a rapid leg up to more rapidly, without overanalyzing, because most people I work with are so tired, they don't even have the energy to learn something at first. Or they're too sick or, you know, confused. So I give them the leg up by doing the energy healing for them for a period of time, usually 4 to 6 sessions. This gives people so much relief. They sleep again. They start digesting. They eliminate more with ease. They start feeling more energy come back. And then they feel hopeful. And then they get their brain working more efficiently, and then I teach them the self-care tools. This is all part of my whole high-speed healing way, and I do. I teach them a specific technique that I developed to find where the emotions are going and getting stored up in their body and how to release them, not just hold them in, hold them down, numb them out, suppress, repress, and deny them. And I also teach a belief clearing. Most people don't ever examine their thinking process. They think every thought running through their head is actually true, and it isn't. Most of them are not true. So I teach people a way to learn to examine their thoughts and release the ones that are not serving them and get back to thinking in a natural way that's helpful. And when you combine changing the thoughts and releasing the damaging emotions, and you get the help, the accelerated help with your energy field, those three things combined, there's nowhere else to look. And then what you're suggesting, I find people who then start doing these elixirs and nutrients and their dietary, they change their diets, there's less resistance to that, number one. And number two, they assimilate the nutrients better and faster. And they desire to stay on that track. They're not constantly trying to willpower or force themselves to eat what they don't like. They literally, their vibration changes, and they want to eat healthier. They want to eat a higher vibrational, higher frequency diet.
And actually, what I'm saying is even a little deeper than that. And that is, anyone who's eating any diet and who's in any belief system, who simply starts making and drinking nourishing herbal infusions a quart a day, that what you're talking about will happen. and then they will want to and be available to you in the high-speed energy healing. Because
well, it
they
can
won't be
work that way.
Anymore.
Absolutely.
As I say, don't change your diet. Let your diet change you.
I love that. Well, see, there are many doorways in, okay? And it can
and every doorway
it definitely
is a doorway
can work
to
that way. There really is. And some people start with what you're suggesting. I've just worked with a lot of people who either wouldn't do it, couldn't do it for whatever excuse or reason. And they were so severe that they didn't find it working fast enough for them. And
worked
and
5 days.
Hmm? What?
5 days.
Mm, beautiful. Because either way can be a doorway in to make a person available to, you know, if they start with my method, I find people overnight, often, well, I'll never forget the first time I worked on a dog, the person was Greg, brought his dog in to work with me. This is many years ago. He said, I don't know what you did to George, but George became a vegan overnight, and he only wants to eat fresh living foods now. And so then I started noticing people who told me overnight they wanted to juice or eat this or that, and they no longer were eating pizza and fried foods. And I started seeing that it was shifting their frequencies and making them open to the higher frequency foods.
As I'm concerned, juice is worse than pizza. I'd much rather see somebody eat pizza than juice.
Well,
nothing on this planet eats raw food. There's no nutrition of any kind available from raw food.
Yeah.
Nothing on this planet that eats raw food, except a few people who don't really understand how to nourish themselves.
Yeah.
And so I'm appalled at what's happened to this person, and I was just thrilled to read last week that the number of vegans, in other words, people eating a totally untenable diet, a diet of hatred, has fallen to its lowest level ever in the United States.
Interesting.
Less than 1% of the population is involved in this absurdity. It's not good for the planet to be a vegan, and it's certainly not good for your body, and it's really bad for your brain. It's why I call them vegans, because they're so vague.
Interesting. Well, definitely different strokes for different folks. I have found, you know, there's many pathways in, and there's learning from all of it, so I won't take up a debate here.
I've never found anybody to be able to get to wholeness by excluding any living thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
When we say that some other living thing is not acceptable to us, we are not talking about wholeness.
I couldn't agree with you more. So back to high-speed healing, because the whole diet is not my expertise. I don't give dietary advice. I work in the energy field, and that's my expertise.
Totally. And I agree with you that many people are eating food that doesn't have much chi or much energy in it. It's not whether it's meat or a vegetable, because you can make a homemade pizza that's loaded with energy, and you can go get a really tired vegetable.
Yes, for sure. No question
about it.
It
really does have to do with chi, with energy.
Everything does.
I walk barefoot, and people say, oh, you have so much energy. And I say, no, the earth has so much energy. And I'm simply tied in. I am supplied with energy with every step.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm barefoot right now as we speak.
To do that, you just have to take your shoes off, but most people aren't willing to.
Oh, interesting.
But you're tied into that.
I find
energy.
It hard to put the shoes on, actually.
Exactly. I can feel it in your voice and in your body that
yeah.
upwelling energy from the earth finds an easy path through you and into whatever you would like, in any way you want to share it with others, through words, through your hands, through your books.
Exactly.
Tell us a little more about your book. What made you write a book? Such a solitary thing, and you're such a social person.
Well, I wrote the book after a loud voice within kept asking me to share. And actually, it took a long time for me to get it out. When I would work, years ago, I only worked with people individually, and every single person after we would finish our sessions would say, oh, Deborah, you should write a book. Oh, Deborah, you should write a book. Oh, you know, and it finally sunk in that I was saying the same thing over and over and over and over to people, and I need to just write some things down, and maybe it would help more people in a faster way. So that's what motivated me to write the book. And in it, it's quite personal. I shared quite a bit of my own personal journey because I went through health hell. And that was my big wake-up call. So I was able to transform what could look like a really negative experience, but it became the greatest turning point of my life. And that's why, to any of you who are listening tonight or whenever you listen to this recording, if you're going through hell, it can be the absolute greatest blessing if you use it to wake up. And that's what I did.
Turn your hard box into a soft success.
I'm sorry? What did you say?
Turn your hard knocks into a soft success.
Hard knocks. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yes. So,
I'm not
you know, the book,
are you hearing the interference on the phone line?
I sure am. It's like someone washing their dishes by hand or washing something by hand. What is that?
Oh,
yeah.
It seems to have stopped.
Now it stopped, yeah. I think we have a third party.
I wonder. Oh, my goodness. What haven't we talked about that you really wanted to talk about this evening?
Well, I guess what I'd like to talk about is that there are people who, no matter what they try, they just seem to not respond to the treatment or the things that they're doing. And they get very frustrated, understandably so. And they always say to me, Deborah, I've tried everything. But one or nothing shows up on a medical test, and then the doctors don't know what to tell them to do. And this can be a very upsetting situation. I'd like to speak to those people who feel like they've tried everything or where everything they try, things might show up on a test, and they do exactly as they're told. Nothing works, or nothing shows up on a test. And I'd like to say to you, you are not cursed. It's not your karma. You're not stuck. You just have a blind spot. And I promise you that what I have found in every single case is that there is some habit of thought combined with an emotional habit that is actually contributing to the problem. And most practitioners won't know how to take you to investigate that. And this is why you're stuck. And you get stuck in a revolving door, trying harder and harder, thinking the same thoughts, having the same emotions, and you can't get out into the hallway. And so one of the reasons I think people finally get help over here is that we have that three-pronged approach where we investigate the mental aspects, we go deep into the emotions, and we do the energy field. And like I said earlier, if you look at those three areas, you will change. You will. So I just want to make sure that if you're out there and you're feeling hopeless and helpless like I was many years ago, don't give up hope. Even if it sounds wacky or too out there, you need to try something out of the box, out of the norm, and you just might be shocked at how it could work for you. So don't give up, whether it's with me or someone else, you know, just don't give up and take the next indicated step that you feel you're willing to do.
What's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Reach out to me on the website, which is www.internationalcpi.com. You can email us through the website. You'll see a list of services. You can get a free copy of my book. There's many videos you can watch. There's a lot. There's something for everyone. So go to internationalcpi.com. We do answer every email. Sometimes it takes a day or two or three, but we will get back to you and would love to help you. Thank you so much, Susan.
Copy of your book? Deborah,
a digital copy that's free to everyone. Yes, I want people to wake up and get the help they need, and sometimes my story seems to really have an impact, so we start giving it away Absolutely free. If you like to underline and dog ear the pages, you can go to Amazon for that, a paperback.
Or an actual book. You know, I think that we are engaged in reweaving the healing cloak of the ancients. And so I want to thank you for the beautiful work that you are doing on this cloak, this amazing web of energy that being brought in through you and all of the people that you touch. Thank you very, very.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me and helping me get the word out to more and more people, because it truly is miraculous what I've seen and what I know is possible. And I just love when I see people who were helpless and hopeless make that turnaround and start to thrive. I know you must feel the same. And it's just, there's no greater gift to both of us, you know.
No higher high than seeing somebody.
No higher high, isn't it? It's the greatest high ever when somebody with 30 years of fibromyalgia pain says, wow, Deborah, in less than an hour, I'm pain-free for the first time. When someone tells me they've slept for the first time in a decade, when someone tells me their stomach stops hurting, I mean, there's no higher high. So thank you for helping me reach more
people.
Thank
you so much, Deborah Wade. And Sarah Ellen, thanks for helping restore herbal medicine as people's medicine. Green blessings, everybody, and good night.